So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Will Beckett of Hawksmoor Restaurants. Hi, Will.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very well. So, Will, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you and the work that you do?
Absolutely, yeah. We've got four Hawksmoor restaurants in London. Hawksmoor are British steak restaurants and cocktail bars. And I set it up with my business partner, but who's been my best friend since I was 11.
Fantastic.
We've been in restaurants and bars before, as it happens, relatively unsuccessfully, which maybe we'll come to a bit later, but we always wanted to do this British restaurant, steak restaurant based around British beef, and we opened one of those in 2006, and it's become, I think, one of London's more popular restaurants now. We just opened one in November in just off Regent Street.
So does that mean you've got three now, or is that four in London?
We've got four, yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you because back in 2012, it makes it feel like it's a long time ago.
Way back in 2012. Yeah.
It's 21st of January today, and it's albeit 3 weeks ago. But back in early in 2012. Hawksmoor appeared in the Sunday Times' 100 Best Small Companies to Work For.
Yes.
I mean, congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
But following that award, you and the company was quoted as saying that the company believes that by encouraging staff to embrace their individual personalities, they will be happy at work and in turn provide a friendly environment for customers. I mean,
yeah.
You said that, and I thought that's brilliant. That's not just command and control type stuff. That's a real... We want to hire people to express themselves, and I just want to understand a bit more about that.
Yeah, we've tried to kind of build a company with quite a strong culture here, which I think is one of the things that's let us grow quite quickly over the last 3 years.
Right.
And yeah, one of the things I think is I've always been conscious that many of my friends are unhappy at work, unhappy in their jobs.
Right.
I think part of that is they turn up to work and are required to kind of change personality when they clock in at nine, and they become professional versions of themselves.
Yeah.
Reverting back to their normal personality when they leave at five.
Indeed, I call it the Jekyll and Hyde syndrome.
And I think that kind of schizophrenia over a long time kind of contributes to a sense of not being very happy at work, and we've always kind of said we want to go the other way. We wanted to have people who are different,
mm-hmm.
but who work to the same standard. So if you come here as a waiter, you're kind of just asked to be a good version of yourself,
right?
Cheesy as that sounds, and you know, if it feels to us like it should be different, if you're on table 10 or table 20, that you should have a slightly different experience,
right? But
the standard should be the same, and that's really, really important to us. And I think that in turn has kind of helped us attract a certain kind of person,
right,
who, you know, has been attracted to the hospitality industry just because, you know, because they like people, they like dealing with people, they enjoy food and drink. But they've been put off over time by the many restaurants that kind of encourage you to just be the same,
right,
as everybody else that works in the business. So it's kind of worked very well for us as part of our culture. And I think it's getting adopted a bit more widely in London restaurants now.
Yeah, because what you're saying is you talk about building this culture, but actually the culture, it seems to me, I think one of the things is that there's a lot of debate and discussion and talk and things about what is culture in business. And it seems to me that what you've almost said to people is like, we want to give you the freedom to be yourself, to be the best version of yourself, but we want us to collectively aspire to these high standards.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. I mean, just to take an example, I'm sitting in Seven Dials, one of our restaurants at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a waiter here called Chris Woodhead.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris is covered in tattoos. He's got tattoos on his hands and his knuckles all the way up his arms. And
yeah.
There's no reason whatsoever in my mind that should make Chris any less effective at a table. Means that he knows less about the food that we sell or the drink that we sell.
Sure.
How he chooses to look is entirely up to him. And he is a fantastic waiter.
Yeah.
But he's also a waiter, I don't think he'd mind me saying this, who's unemployable in some companies for precisely that reason.
Yes.
I mean, I went to a Disney seminar at some point where they presented the induction video to Disney, where they said, you know, you can't have any visible tattoos, you can't have any visible facial hair apart from a neatly trimmed moustache.
Yes.
You know, they really went to town on appearance.
Yes.
And we don't have that. You know, as long as you take some pride with your appearance, then it doesn't matter to us if you look a little different.
Yes.
And as a result, we've got some incredible people here, like Chris, who don't get employed at other kind of comparable spend per head restaurants. And just going back to your point earlier, just or that quote from Sunday Times, I think it's fair to say that we see our primary role really as making sure the people who work here are happy.
Right.
And their primary role is making sure that customers are happy.
Right.
And I kind of feel if you get that right, it kind of just flows naturally from happy staff.
Well, I think so. It's almost as if it flows downhill or it becomes this virtuous cycle in a way.
Yeah.
So how does that impact on your choice of staff? I mean, what does that mean in terms of, do you interview people? Do you recruit people in a different sort of way? How does that work?
A different part of the company culture is we talk about the idea of work hard and be nice to people, and that the restaurant industry is littered with companies that do one of those things well.
Yes.
You know, the stereotypes at each extreme. Work hard is the kitchen environment where everybody's working 60, 70 hours a week.
Yes.
For pittance pay, getting branded by a chef with a knife, or, you know, things getting thrown around, lots and lots of shouting, kind of an attitude, you know, a sort of slight atmosphere of fear.
Yes.
But very, very high standards coming out of the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Except nobody's happy.
Yeah.
And at the other extreme, you know, the kind of lackadaisical, everybody's very, very nice to each other, and no one gets in trouble for anything, but standards are poor or inconsistent at best. And actually doing the two things together, work hard and be nice to people, is very difficult. But really, that's kind of at the heart of how we employ and train people. So when anybody that works at Hawksmoor will have had at least an interview and a work trial.
Right.
And the interview, not entirely, but a large part of the interview is about the interviewer kind of getting a sense of the be nice to people bit. You know, can I see myself working 45 hours a week with this person? Will this person fit in with the team without there being some kind of reaction on either of their parts? Are they going to fit in here? Do we like them?
Yeah.
And the second part of the process, the work trial, is the other bit. You know, Hawksmoor is a very hard place to work.
Yes.
We work quite long hours. We're very, very busy, and we work to a high standard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's draining.
Yes.
Can people keep up? So broadly, we're trying to get that, you know, people who can do those two things. And we kind of feel we can teach them the rest,
yeah.
As long as they can do that. So I think, you know, we're one of many companies, I think, that look for a certain type of person and then believe that we can give them the requisite skills rather than look for the skills and then try and kind of teach a personality type, which I think is impossible.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so how does all that translate into sort of staff retention? Because hospitality is notoriously... has a notorious reputation for having high staff turnover, because waiting jobs can be quite transient and quite seasonal and all of that, and also quite hard,
yeah,
and also because a lot of people do it part time. But what's your experience with changing the sort of the model and the way that you treat people, being on sort of how you've been able to keep and retain staff?
Well, we feel it's good, although actually I'm unable to benchmark it against other people, so
right.
So I'm not entirely sure, but you're right, you know, that hospitality is traditionally that, especially in London, is somewhere where people kind of come while they're waiting for something else to happen.
Yeah.
And jobs are easy to get, which means that they're easy to leave, and traditionally they're not paid very well.
Yes.
And none of those things, I hope, apply here. People are paid very well. You know, waiters earn what teachers earn or nurses earn.
Right.
More, maybe. You know, whereas our general managers earn what headmasters or GPs or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yes.
The jobs are quite difficult to get.
I think what's quite fascinating for me is that, you know, if you think it's possibly a general, it's almost like a general view or general malaise. The thing that strikes me quite fascinates me is that how you have so many of these companies that where the frontline staff are their deliverers of service and their brand ambassadors, as it were. But in often cases, they are the lowest paid employees in the building or in the organization.
Yeah.
And it almost, there's a real value statement there.
Yeah.
If you understand what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard by quite a good restaurateur, I've heard frontline staff referred to as cannon fodder.
Right.
You know, you just expect a high churn. A lot of you know, my peers expect a very high churn amongst their staff. So the statistic that we care about, the two statistics that we care about are staff turnover and staff tenure
right.
for people after they've reached their probation period.
Okay.
So we would expect staff turnover to be high-ish in our probation period.
Yes.
Where, to my mind, it's absolutely fine for either the company or the employee to say, "Do you know what? This isn't quite right for me.
Yeah.
Let's stop."
Sure.
But after that probation period, what is it? And our figure's 27%, which is high in many industries, but I believe very, very low for hospitality.
Yeah, sure.
And our tenure is running on to almost 2 years.
Wow, that's
which
fantastic.
Is on average, you know, so which again is high, especially considering, you know, we're opening restaurants every year. So by their very nature, there are quite a lot of people in the company who only joined in the last year because we're growing so quickly.
Yes.
So, you know, it matters to us. And our senior team has a lot of people in it who've been with us for 6+ years, including one person, actually, who was with us on day one of when we opened our first little bar when we were 26. So, you know, hopefully people stay around for quite a long time.
I mean, coming back to your prior experience, you talked about you've opened up a couple of different bars and restaurants and you mentioned sort of not very successfully. I mean, what sort of lessons have you sort of learned sort of along the way that you, and things that you're doing differently now as compared to what you've done in the past?
Well, interestingly, we were always fairly good at doing at product.
Right.
At food and drink. And uh-huh. we'd always had quite a lot of customers, we had good reviews and we won awards, even with the earlier things. But we weren't good at the business of running restaurants and we weren't good at retaining staff.
Right.
I think at that point we kind of got by on we're quite nice people and a certain kind of staff quite likes working for quite nice people.
Right.
But we didn't really do much to help them kind of build careers and I think that we're quite nice approach, which again is quite common,
yeah,
can only take you so far and people will only stick with it for so long. So definitely the people side of it is something we really learned. And the business of running restaurants, I think the way we describe it at Hawksmoor is that making money is not the point of what we do, but doing it allows us to do what we do. You know, the other three restaurants didn't, we had a restaurant, a pub and a bar,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't make money and they don't exist anymore.
Right.
And those jobs are gone. So I think kind of people just know that it's an important part of business.
Yes.
And I think in the restaurant industry, there is a slight tendency to kind of overlook that. Customers don't like it. Customers aren't interested in whether a restaurant makes money or not. And that's exactly as it should be. But, you know, staff are badly trained on how restaurants make money and how all of that works. So we, you know, we include a section on just here's a basic introduction to how restaurants make money.
Right.
In day one of our induction, just we kind of want staff who understand what we're doing. You know, we don't want to kind of keep things secret. So I think probably those two things, start people and running restaurants as businesses, are the two things that we've learned. But hopefully we've got better in a range of areas.
I mean, I think what's quite interesting is that it seems to me that what you're not doing is you're not just the people that you hire, you're not just putting them into boxes and asking them to remain in the boxes. Almost what you're doing is you're, say, taking the sides of the box down and say, look, actually, this is the business. This is, you know, this is what we're concerned about. This, you should know about this because you're in this business. You are the business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you build awareness around that, then they're more likely to pay attention and see things as they happen. And therefore, if they're more aware of it, then they're more likely to spot things and keep an eye on things as things develop.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay, so if I was to say to you, say that somebody's listening to this, you know, this podcast interview, or somebody's reading the notes, and I would say to you, if you were to do it all over again, what would be your top tips for somebody wanting to, if they were setting up or driving growth in their business, in terms of trying to get the best out of their teams and deliver great service and great product and all that?
You're talking about restaurants or kind of general principles?
Well, let's take restaurants, because I think possibly the there might be, well, it'll be specific, but I'm sure there's going to be a general application as well.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to think of key lessons. I think maybe one of them, and it isn't actually restaurant specific at all, is learning from mistakes. You know, we did the three restaurants that didn't work very well early. And I think it's fair to say that generally we make lots of mistakes, but we very rarely make the same one twice.
Right.
And I think that's really, really important. Learning from the stuff you do badly tends to be a much better experience than the stuff you do well.
Sure.
Equally, kind of not resting on laurels and accepting good enough, I think, is a pretty key thing. Constantly working on your business and how you can improve it, and trying to imbue that in staff is a real challenge.
Uh-huh.
I think broadly, you know, the more you and the people that work with you are able to enjoy what they do,
right,
the more productive people can be.
Yes.
And I think that there's a big challenge there, and I think a mistake that is made fairly regularly in the restaurant industry, at least, and I'm sure it applies, is people see a successful business and try to copy key things in it.
Yes.
And I really do believe that your best bet is to kind of plow your own path. You know what the right, know the basic principles of business.
Yes.
But there's no point you trying to create my company.
No.
You should check in on the things that you believe in very strongly, and the way that you would like to do business. And you need to surround yourself with people who feel the same.
Yes.
I think if you can manage that, to me, that's half the battle won.
Yeah.
And if you fail to do that early, I imagine it's very, very difficult to kind of to get that back later.
Yes. No, I think that's right. I mean, it's almost like you have to plot your own journey, in a way.
Yeah.
Tell your own story.
Absolutely.
So what's next for Hawksmoor and for 2013 and beyond? I mean, is it expansion and world domination?
Well, world domination, definitely. We're thinking of maybe a small Asian country to start with. No. You know, we've always said the same thing, really, which is if we can satisfy two basic principles, then we would like to carry on growing our company.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is customers wanting that. And I think by that I kind of mean if our restaurants are oversubscribed, which they certainly have been, you know, in the run-up to Christmas.
Yes.
January's not the best time to tell, but every indication is that they'll carry on being oversubscribed this year.
Yes.
That gives you some confidence that you can grow because there's demand there.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the supply side, it's if our company has in it lots of people who feel like they're ready to move upwards,
yes,
or take on a new challenge, and maybe without getting promoted, but go and open somewhere.
Yeah.
Then we ought to give them the scope to do that. So there's kind of an internal and an external driver to whether we grow.
Yes.
And you know, we took on 120 people with the last restaurant.
Right.
So we know that, you know, there's a big period now of kind of consolidation for us, training, pushing people a little bit harder. And I'm guessing kind of at the end of that comes, you know, a desire to keep momentum going.
Fantastic. So, well, just conscious of time and things, mm-hmm. So that I always end these interviews with one final question. And that question is, what would you like to shamelessly plug?
Well, I have nothing to shamelessly plug apart from my restaurants, which, by the way, are very good. That's it, really. You know, I think what I'd hope from people who read about Hawksmoor in this way, i.e. through something to do with business or something to do with the employees or something to do with something that isn't food and drink,
mm-hmm.
is that they could read or listen to that, come to the restaurants and kind of feel, I know exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And enjoy the restaurants for that, as well as I hope they would enjoy it for food and drink, which is how most people come to the restaurants. I think it's a really important part of what we do, and I hope it comes across, even as a customer, that we're that kind of business.
Well, I must say that I've been to one of your restaurants, and I must say that it's a great atmosphere. It's like being in a big hall in a way. The one that I went to was in the city, and the food was great, the service was great, it was a great atmosphere. We had a ball. So you definitely get the thumbs up from me, and I will.
Thank you very much.
We will definitely. I'll link all this up, and we'll get it all promoted and things, and hopefully we'll get people sort of. We'll spread the word and people can come and check you out.
Lovely. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Cheers.